Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown for July the 5th, 2023. If you are feeling a little bit of a sweet tooth, that's totally okay because it is National Graham Cracker Day and National Apple Turnover Day. My name is Tom Hollingsworth, and I am the dessert chef with the most. And joining me is someone who enjoys a good s'more every once in a while, Mr. Stephen Foskett. Stephen, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Man, we made s'mores yesterday, and we used the giant marshmallows. Let me just tell you, the giant marshmallows don't make such good s'mores. It's too much marshmallow.
Yeah, you got to get the balance right, just like the balance of news stories that we have on the rundown today. There's been a lot of news that's happened. I mean, the U.S. took yesterday off for a little bit of revelry, but that didn't mean the news stopped all over the place. So we've got some cool stuff coming up. Google Cloud has announced the availability of Big Lake, which supports Apache Iceberg and enables organizations to transform their data lakehouses. Apache Iceberg is an open table format that facilitates data management with analytics and over a single copy of data. With Big Lake, customers can leverage open source engines like Spark, Trino, and Flink to process Iceberg tables, while BigQuery enables querying of those tables. Stephen, is this a major move in the world of data?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think this reflects the fact that Apache Iceberg is becoming really a major player in the world of data. In fact, we have talked quite a lot in the past here on the rundown about various Iceberg compatible and Iceberg adjacent developments. And the fact that we've got Google here with a first class offering to support Iceberg, I think that's great. I think another trend that's being reflected here is this emerging trend of data lakehouses. You got to love the metaphors here in the data world. First, you had the data lakes. Now you got the data lakehouses. And the idea there is to make a data lake a little bit more friendly, a little bit more useful, a little bit more usable for sort of casual use. And that's really what this is all about. So absolutely, I think that it's great to see Google in the Apache Iceberg lake. Do icebergs go in lakes? I guess they could. I think this is overall a big reflective of a bigger trend in the data world. It's time once again, Tom, for a game of you don't want the government emailing you for no reason. Today's lucky contestant is a familiar name, SolarWinds. The company got a Wells notice last week, which is an official communication from the SEC saying they're planning on taking action against officers of the company for something they did. While several officers were lucky recipients, the SEC filing specifically mentions the CFO, Barton Kalsu, and CISO, Tim Brown. These notices stem from a hacking fiasco that happened in late 2020 and are the latest in a long line of measures being taken by the government to hold this company accountable for the hacking operation that exposed federal and private networks to foreign and state actors.
Yeah, I really don't want to be on the receiving end of any emails from the SEC, let alone the vaunted Wells notice, which is not, we are indicting you. It is, someone at this office has taken an unreasonable interest in things that you have done, and you will learn more about it later. And the fact that they specifically called out the CFO and the CISO tells me they already have all the evidence they need. And this is just more of a formality to get all the paperwork in order to make sure that nothing untoward happens. What I find interesting about this whole thing is that the SEC is looking at this from a securities perspective. Point of clarification, I'm not talking about keeping your data encrypted. I'm talking about the things that companies trade back and forth amongst each other that are financial instruments, so financial securities. Why is that important? When's the last time you remember a company getting in a lot of trouble for a data breach? Go on, I'll wait. We could be here for a while. The answer is we really haven't. And there's a reason for that, is because other than the 999 years of free credit monitoring that Stephen and I both enjoy now, as we discussed last week at Security Field Day, there really aren't any kind of, penalties, except on the financial side. If you can somehow find a way to say that this caused some kind of a weird situation inside of a company related to their stock price or the way that they trade information back and forth, suddenly it makes it the purview of the SEC. That's a junkyard dog that doesn't let go of you whenever it gets teeth into you until it's extracted blood or a huge fine. And that's what I think the SEC is kind of, telegraphing here. is that if you have a data breach big enough to cause material impact to your bottom line, and by all accounts, the stock price for SolarWinds has gone down significantly in the last 2.5 years, this is a way for the SEC to basically say, now we have jurisdiction and we are going to jurist this thing to death. And that's a good thing, because what I believe has been holding a lot of these companies back from being a lot more serious about this is the lack of penalty. It's just like your kids. If you don't punish your kids for the things that they do, no matter how insignificant, eventually they'll get to the point where they're like, well, I'm not going to get punished for anything I do, so why do I even bother to follow the rules? So by having these Wells notices being very publicly announced and being publicly announced as to who they're going after, it's a signal to everybody else in the industry. If you screw up on the level of having a state actor hacking you again, we will come after you. It will be a long, drawn out process and you will not like it. So it's better if you just secure everything now so we don't have to worry about it in the future. Steven, Samsung is on track for some tiny improvements. Actually, more appropriately, they're making big improvements in tiny things. At the Samsung Foundry Forum, it was announced that the production of their 2-nanometer nodes is expected to be on track for 2025, and the even smaller 1.4-nanometer nodes will be anticipated in 2027. In between that, Samsung will be offering a process node that's optimized for HPC computing in 2026, and then the next year, they're going to focus a process node for automotive computing. These announcements mean that Samsung is now in line with TSMC and Intel, who will both be releasing new, smaller processes along those same schedules. Steven, is this tiny news a big deal for chip people?
Well, it's just part of the continuing story that we've been covering for a long, long time, isn't it? Everyone wants to rule the world. That's what they say. Everybody wants to rule the semiconductor world, and TSMC is obviously in the lead, way out in the lead. In fact, even amid the economic slowdown, which we will talk about a little bit more here in the rundown, TSMC is still doing great because they are basically able to take the high end of the market. Now, everybody sees that. Everybody wants it. We've talked a lot about the fact that Intel is moving aggressively into foundry operations for smaller and smaller process nodes. They expect to compete in this space very, very soon, and they're making a lot of news and investing a lot of money to make that happen. Samsung is far and away the other big competitor in this space, and it's nice to see that they're making these announcements too. Now, Samsung is, I think, widely considered to be a bit behind TSMC, not as far behind maybe as Intel. But that being said, the fact that they're going to invest this much money, the fact that they're releasing this roadmap, really puts a stake in the ground. Remember as well that how these things are used is that the foundries make these announcements, and then the chip designers go to them and make commitments, real commitments with real money at stake to actually use these process nodes. So although I think that it's wise to be skeptical, especially given the flops and fiascos and failures of minimizing chip process nodes over the last few years, I think that it also shows that this is a big game here, and it's really moving forward. And Samsung intends to be part of it and not just let Intel and TSMC duke it out for the best. Now, there's one more company that I want to mention here that we haven't talked about yet. It's called Rapidus. It's a company in Japan, and they are sort of a dark horse here in the race. So Japan has been way behind on process nodes. We're talking, like 40 nanometer, not 4 nanometer. And yet, a consortium of Japanese electronics companies is putting their money where their mouth is and investing in an absolute cutting edge company in Japan to compete in this space as well, which I think is just, it's a lot of fun to watch. I think that it's really an interesting area of the industry. And frankly, nobody loses, because when all of these process nodes come online, we're all going to get better everything, better, more power efficient, faster electronics everywhere. And that's pretty good, right? Aviatrix announced last week that they're bringing in a new CEO for the company. Doug Merritt is no stranger to the top spot. He's the former CEO of Splunk. He jumps into a company poised to be a big part of the growing cloud networking space. Since being valued at around $2 billion by investors in 2021, Aviatrix has grown annual revenues to about $100 million. Merit takes over from Steve Mullaney, who's already said that Aviatrix won't need another funding round and is on track for an IPO in 2025. Tom, we've seen Aviatrix at Field Day and really enjoyed them. Are they ready to hit the big time?
It sounds like they are. I mean, first of all, they're making money, so you can't go wrong with that. That's one of those things that, you know, when a startup is actually getting to that point. I also thought it was funny that they come out and said that they are not going to take another funding round, that they're aiming for an IPO, which means the other exits are maybe not off the table, but definitely kind of in the background. And that to me says that they think they've bet on a winner here. And I think it's funny because in the interview, Mullaney said that he is not he's more focused on the $1 to $100 million range than the $100 million to $1 billion range, which means, you know, in CEO startup speak, I am more focused on launching these platforms, getting my equity in and then getting out before we get to the drudgery of growing that business, you know, incrementally, for lack of a better term. Now, on the other hand, Merit absolutely is the $1 billion guy because that's what he did for Splunk back in 2014. And of course, he stepped away in 2021 after they got a big infusion of investor cash from some venture capitalists. So I'm sure he's probably like, you know what, hit my number. I think they're valued at like, what, $16, $17 billion right now. And so they're like, you know what, I'm going to do my thing. And that's good because I've always said that you have to have somebody who has a different mentality to steer the ship after it's in the middle of the ocean. Everybody's favorite thing is the Steve Jobs, Tim Cook dichotomy. Steve is a builder, was a builder, and he is, let's be fair, in all estimations of it, Steve is not the guy to run your ship when it's a $100 billion company. He is the guy to go build things when you need them. Tim Cook, on the other hand, is the steady hand on the steering wheel because he understands that, you know, these big titanic shocks in the way that you do product lines are bad for business. And that's kind of where we're at with Aviatrix. If they're making money, obviously they're doing something right. They need someone who's going to look at what's available, grow those lines to their natural conclusions or to their expansions, and continue to grow that revenue. Does that mean that we can see, you know, the cloud networking startup space kind of growing into its own? I think so. Does it mean that Aviatrix is not going to get acquired? Don't bet on it. I think that there's enough need out there for this kind of offering in a lot of companies that need to skill up quickly that they could just come in with a big offer and say, you know what, you want to be a billion-dollar company? We can make that happen. We have the cash on hand. But it certainly looks like their trajectory is to cash this out on the stock market. So if that's the case, you know, good luck to Doug Merritt and the rest of the team over at Aviatrix. I look forward to hearing about the success in the future. And of course, you know, we'd love to see you back at Field Day at some point in the future to learn a little bit more about some of the cool stuff you've been working on. Stephen, Argonne's Aurora supercomputer is now humming along with some Intel hardware. The installation of 10,624 dual CPU blades is now complete. The unit's also running on the Ponte Vecchio GPU as well, because there are six of them in each blade. And if you're doing the math on the back of an envelope, that's 63,744 GPUs. The formal launch of Aurora is expected to come a little bit later, and that should bring the whole unit in line with the current top 500 winner, which is running on AMD processors. Now, Stephen, I know that for the people at home, I have an extremely important question. Can I run Doom on this thing?
Yes, probably. I mean, it's x86, so sure, why not? But this thing is absolutely mammoth. I think that that's the most important thing to know about this story. This supercomputer is not only likely to beat Frontier, it's likely to beat Frontier by quite a lot. Also, I think the meaning of this story and why it matters to our listeners who probably aren't working at these national labs with absolute, you know, exascale supercomputers. I think the reason that this matters to them is because this computer, as you mentioned, includes over 20,000 Xeon Max CPUs. So that's the latest Sapphire Rapids Xeons with high bandwidth memory integrated with them, and over 60,000 GPU Max GPUs. These are the most advanced chiplet-based system ever made. The Ponte Vecchio chip that you mentioned is absolutely insane. It's got different tiles from different fabs and different process nodes. It's got high bandwidth memory. It's got everything going on. It's absolutely crazy cutting-edge stuff. And why does this matter? It matters for the same reason that HPC matters to the cloud and the enterprise generally, which is that this technology trickles down. The fact that Intel could manufacture 60,000 of these GPU Max devices that work and install them is a good sign. It's a really good sign for Intel that they're actually able to get this next generation stuff moving and running. It's also a good sign for this technology because we're going to be having more and more of these chiplet-based processors coming out. And the fact that Intel is showing that they can manufacture these things in volume, that they can combine the results of different fabs into one successful and useful unit with memory, with different tiles, it's just good news all around. Also, it's just cool, isn't it? It's cool to think about a advanced supercomputer that's faster than anything that's ever existed. So I can't wait for the next series of results to run. As pointed out, this thing isn't up and running yet. It's all installed, but we probably won't get Linpack results until November. So crossing our fingers and looking forward to November when we hear the big number coming out of this new supercomputer. Cloud networking company Prosimo has announced that their flagship multi-cloud networking platform, NCN, is now available for free. This isn't a trial offering either. It's a full cloud networking across AWS, Azure, and GCP. The basic connectivity is free, and any additional services offered by Prosimo, such as Zero Trust, Policy Management, and Visibility, are available for an additional monthly fee. This follows competitor Alkira's free offering released last year. However, Alkira's free solution is for visibility only. Tom, Prosimo and Alkira, these are some familiar companies to us, and you know a lot about them. What do you think?
I think this is an excellent move by Prosimo because, in effect, if you want to forgive the cliche, they're putting their money where their mouth is, or in this case, their lack of money. You may recall, offering the base model for free and then offering services on top of it. Where have I heard that before? Just go over to Palo Alto and talk to the folks at VMware from 2008 when they made the ESXi server completely free. And everyone was like, that's insane. You're giving away the farm. No, we're giving away the land. We're building a farm on it. And that's exactly what the plan here is. If you think about it like this, you have to pick something. You're either going to pick native networking or you're going to pick somebody else's solution. If you're looking at going multi-cloud from the start, you're going to pick a solution that allows you to do that. Well, if you're going to have to learn how to do it anyway, why not pick the one that doesn't cost you anything? And then when you get into a point where you know you're going to need additional features like Zero Trust or visibility, well, you've already got the platform in place. This is how networking works, especially when we're networking between two disparate locations, whether it's AWS and Azure, whether it's Azure and GCP. We're going to create an overlay on top of it, an easy to manage dashboard. And Prosimo is one of the ones that knows what they're doing. I mean, we've talked about them many times. I've gotten several briefings from them and their team. They have some very appealing offerings, whether it's networking related or security related. But the key is that by getting in there, by making this sticky to start with, by making the companies not try to skill up on the individual building block components of the individual clouds, and instead of using that overlay, that just means that whatever features those companies need, they'll go to Prosimo to get them first. It's not like I'm going to do something in AWS and, you know, build my multi-cloud network and then suddenly decide I need to turn on an AWS only feature. I'm going to go to Prosimo and I'm gonna be like, I need this to run on both. Can you do that? And they're going to be like, yes. And it is this much per month per user. And you'll go, oh, okay, I can pay that. So I think that this is brilliant. And in the long run, I think it will offer them a great way to be sticky in the organization, which is something that we've talked about many times over the years. If you have to pick something, whatever you pick becomes the default mode of thinking for what you're going to do. So I'm looking forward to this, and the industry seems to be getting behind it as well. All the analysts that I've talked to said that this was a brilliant move, and it kind of it parallels the other moves that have been made. We mentioned the previous moves from Alkira to make their visibility function free. Yeah, visibility is one thing. Look, but don't touch. This is absolutely touch, break, play, and whatever it takes to make it work.
Now that half of 2023 is behind us, Tom, let's take a closer look at the state of the global economy, with a special focus on our favorite enterprise IT industry. as we've discussed, there are many different factors that are impacting the current slowdown in sales of enterprise and cloud technology. There was the overbuying and sort of strange hiring practices that sort of came out of the end of the pandemic. There are the repercussions of the continuing supply chain shortage and production and ramp up and all that. There's the war in Ukraine. There's also major global tensions between US, Europe, and China. There's shifting demand between data center and cloud. And of course, there's a heck of a lot of crime out there. Let's take a look at some of these changes and consider the state of the IT industry in mid-2023. I'll let you kick it off, Tom.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about this supply chain issue that we've seen, because we've talked about it a lot here on the Rundown. We've talked about the fact that the U.S. is starting to restrict the export of advanced chip-making equipment to China. And we were wondering how China was going to respond to that. Well, today, literally this morning, they announced how they were going to do that. And they, if you talk about controlling the means of production, here you go. They are announcing as effectively August 1st, there will be export restrictions on germanium and gallium. And if you're not familiar with those two things from high school chemistry, here's the short version. They're used in every chip that's manufactured on the planet. They are semiconductor materials that are required to make super small chips that, you know, when we talk about all those shrinking process nodes. So while the U.S. and its allies are restricting the export of the equipment to manufacture it, China is turning right around and saying, well, if you won't give us the equipment, we won't give you the materials to make stuff. And that follows from the fact that another big source of these types of rare earth materials was Ukraine, and nothing's getting out of there right now. So we're seeing this kind of cat and mouse trade war developing between the two giants of the world economy. And we don't know where it's going to shake out, because ultimately we have to have those materials and we have to be able to refine them. So there's going to have to be some kind of negotiation going on there. And as we've seen companies like Intel start to diversify their supply chains for manufacturing outside of the US, we have to wonder if that is going to pay off in the long run at all, because if we can't get a hold of the materials because they're either export locked behind Chinese restrictions, or worse yet, they're in war-torn areas like Ukraine and possibly even Russia where we can't even get to them, what impact will that have down the road? Because we saw what happened when there was a chip shortage during the pandemic. I mean, the price of cars shot through the roof. The price of anything that included a chip was way out of whack. And as it started to slowly come back down, we were thinking, okay, we're going to get back to the real world where prices don't feel like they're quite so inflated. And now it's an artificial supply chain crisis that could potentially be causing problems. And Stephen, I know that that could potentially kind of weigh in on the expansion of a lot of the other companies that we've talked to, like Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA.
Yeah, and that's, I think, an interesting aspect as well. So, I mean, first off, this is breaking news, as you said, with the supply chain restrictions from China here. We'll see what happens with this long term. I actually just got another update while we were recording that one of the companies, one of the key companies in this space, is already seeking an export license that would bypass these restrictions. So it's like, what? It seems to me that China is playing a very strategic game here in terms of basically cleverly dealing out the cards it has. I think the West is also trying to play a strategic game with the cards that it has in terms of advanced process node manufacturing equipment. But then there's sort of the, I guess, the boots on the ground situation, which is a little harder to determine. One of the challenges of the modern IT world is that we don't have as much visibility into these companies as we did. And it's surprising given the fact that we live in this interconnected world with cloud companies all, you know, wide open. Their products are wide open and visible. The pricing is pretty well known to people in the know, at least. And all of these developments are being very, very closely watched by people like us who are talking about these every single week and talking about the rumors of the next Intel, the next AMD chip, the next NVIDIA chip. Some of these companies are even releasing roadmaps. We actually were very, very happy to see AMD and NVIDIA show us some of the roadmaps of some of the next generation products in public recently, which gives us a little bit of a warm fuzzy that there is going to be a next generation of a lot of these products. But that being said, are these things really taking hold? So if you remember correctly, the Intel's fourth generation Xeons, the Sapphire Rapids, along with their Xe graphics GPU technology, all this stuff was delayed. And it was delayed by a number of different factors. In fact, the previous generation was also delayed. There was manufacturing challenges. There was many, many revisions of the product. And this allowed AMD to really kind of step ahead of Intel in terms of shipping server CPUs. So the current fourth generation AMD processors that are out there, well, those were intended to compete against the next generation of Intel products, which is one reason that Intel isn't looking so great right now in the data center and the cloud market. But that being said, you know, Intel has really, you know, kind of put on their best show. They're really trying to make a go for it, and they've carved out some interesting niche with Sapphire Rapids. But is it selling? AMD at the same time has recently introduced Bergamo, which is their slimmed down Zen 4 core that allows them to pack as many as 128 onto a single package. Again, this is really cool stuff because this is a full speed, albeit somewhat limited, Zen 4 core, and you can get 256 threads on a single chip. That's phenomenal. Again, the question is, I know it was just released, is it really selling? And then we've got NVIDIA, and NVIDIA just keeps hammering at it with the latest Grace and Hopper CPUs and GPUs out there. They're putting together, they're powering all sorts of supercomputers. Again, the question, though, is it selling? And in order to find this answer out, it's not quite as easy as you'd think, because these things are not really going to be selling in, you know, your data center or mine. It's not like we can go and ask HPE, like, how many ProLiant did you ship with Bergamo? There none. That's not what this thing is for. And so what we're going to be doing is kind of looking at what's going on in the cloud market and looking what's going on in the supply chain. And for that, we have to turn to industry analysts. I have good relationships with a number of them, and I've been following them. And what I'm hearing is, well, a little tepid when it comes to Sapphire Rapids and the AMD products as well. Essentially, there just isn't a huge market right now. A lot of the cloud vendors are extending the lifespan of their products. They're trying to get more out of what they already have. There has not been a huge uptake of Sapphire or Genoa or Bergamo yet. Again, it's early, but there really hasn't been a big uptake of that, which means that even though these things were delayed, they're really not selling that well. And then there's NVIDIA. And frankly, NVIDIA amazingly appears to be firing on all cylinders. We're seeing everybody involved in the NVIDIA ecosystem is having trouble keeping up with demand. They're shipping like crazy. There's buying. Again, this is probably drawn by the fact that a lot of the NVIDIA stuff is used in this in the AI supercomputer binge that we're currently living in. But there again, I think that it's wise to look at this and say, will this continue? Will there be alternatives? I mean, you know, Intel is, as we talked about last week, is right there with their Habana Gaudi, trying to offer a lower priced and moderately competitive product. AMD is there with their GPUs. They're both hungry for what NVIDIA is currently feasting on. And this is a challenge for all of us, because frankly, if these products are not selling, if the cloud vendors aren't buying, if the hyperscalers aren't buying, if the enterprise is still in the midst of a slowdown, it doesn't bode well for a lot of us. And this leads me to question, why is it that the enterprise is in a bit of a slowdown? I mean, it could be because of the transition from on-premises data center to cloud, but it could also be that the enterprise is just wrapped up in a lot of other challenges right now. Isn't that true, Tom?
Yeah, it is, because as we look at the fact that we're trying to get these hardware refreshes done and we're trying to decide, you know, do we stay here? Do we need to move to the cloud? It's not like that is a green field of opportunity that is not being challenged. And one of the things that we're seeing still is a huge spate in ransomware. But this isn't your dad's ransomware, where it's just, you know, some kid who, you know, deploys a file locker on your system. This is coordinated, massive kinds of things. I mean, Clop was probably the latest word that came out. Everyone's like, what is that? Well, it exploited a file transfer exploit that allowed you to like get control of a lot of these appliances that people need use to move large files around. And it basically caused a lot of havoc to the point where the US federal government's offering a bounty to find these people. And we thought that at least in the latter half of 2022, that maybe some of the stuff was going to slow down because, as most people kind of know, a lot of the gangs that do this stuff work out of certain Eastern European countries that are currently at war with certain other European countries. And so it was like, well, are those people being tasked to do other things? And the answer is they were. And then they got, you know, kind of reassigned a little bit. But more importantly, they've outsourced all of those efforts. And we're starting to see these more collectivist, almost like organized crime hacking things going on. And it's becoming more and more targeted. Like, I'm not just looking to see where I can kick in the front door of your organization. I'm looking for every possible way that I can sneak in. I'm trying to exploit things that may not have been updated or try to find ways that I get in and stay in. I mean, we covered the Barracuda Network's email security appliance hack where Barracuda just said, just rip them out and get a new one. Like, we can't even fix it, or it's so expensive, we're not even going to try. Like, that is the thing that worries me, because we've seen a lot of data protection companies that historically have been focused on backup and recovery kind of pivot in a way to looking at this ransomware problem, which to me says it's big enough that it's being noticed outside of the security industry. And like we've said and many times in the past, if we wanted to just include a breach story in every episode of The Rundown, we would have to pick from a list, because there have been so many and they have been so big. Like, this is on the order of causing millions and billions of dollars worth of losses on a regular basis that is having a material impact, as we mentioned earlier with the SolarWinds story, to get other agencies involved. And we're getting to the point where it's going to have to start becoming more offensive. We've seen that in Australia, where, you know, according to Risky Business, they've kind of unleashed the hounds, if you will. U.S. Cyber Command is being more involved in some of these offensive operations. They're, you know, offering their expertise and kind of guiding people into how to do this. And I think that we, you know, as we look at the other story that I talked about, where you have this kind of burgeoning trade war, we're getting to a point where we're having a burgeoning cybersecurity war. But the hard part there is that this isn't fought between governments with ideology and laws and trade restrictions. This is fought between attackers and defenders who, in many cases, while they may be sheltered by a country, they don't directly work for them. So a lot of the recourse that we would typically have to, say, have that person extradited is difficult to do. There was a news story that came out last week where a wanted person by the U.S. government showed up in Kazakhstan and was arrested by the Kazakhstan police, and the U.S. wants him exported. And then all of a sudden, the Russians, because he is a Russian national, found out that he had committed crimes years ago that supersede the U.S. crimes, and they want him extradited back to Russia to, you know, answer for those crimes, if you will. And that's the cat and mouse game that we're going to start playing, is if these people are backed by state actors, what happens when the states get involved but not really involved? If a U.S. Offensive hacker is arrested in a foreign country and faces extradition to a place that he performed operations against, what is the U.S. going to do? Because these things are going to spiral out of control. And when we're dealing with, you know, multi-gigabit DDoSes, when we're dealing with file lockers that attack base level things, when we're talking about the ability to completely destroy cloud data lake repositories with the touch of a button, you know, we're quickly reaching mutually assured destruction on a cyber information scale that I've never seen before.
Yeah, it's really incredible what's going on in the information security space right now. And I think that it's easy to sort of be a little bit jaded by it because, of course, this stuff has been happening. Yeah, there's been intrusions and ransomware and whatever. But it's different now. It used to be that the entire industry was, metaphorically speaking, focused on bars for windows and better doors and better locks. Well, now we're focusing on bandages and detection systems inside. We're focusing on increasing the patrols outside. It's like we've almost thrown in the towel with conventional security. And we're now realizing that we're fighting a very different war against a much more prepared adversary. And a lot of that, as you said, a lot of that goes to these global geopolitical issues. It's been true for a long time that the world's governments supported some forms of cybercrime, and especially if it benefited their interests. Well, now it seems like they're overtly supporting cybercrime. And that's really, really bad situation to be in. And this is really distracting the industry. It's causing all sorts of problems. And it promises really to disrupt a lot of what we're seeing. Frankly, if you're going to be rolling out a new connected application, you really need to be worried about cybercrime. You really need to be worried about international geopolitical cyber gangs, you know, upsetting your platform rather than just, you know, DevOps and rolling into production and high availability, that sort of thing. And all of this, I think, is really causing havoc in terms of the normal functioning of the IT industry. You know, whether it is restrictions on supply chain and commodities, whether it's, you know, geopolitical forces beyond our control, wars and things like that, whether it is cybercrime, whether it is the rollout of technology or the disruptive potential from the data center to the cloud, all of this is causing problems for the industry that we all work in. And for that, I'm going to sort of finish up this look at where do we stand in the middle of 2023 with a somewhat pessimistic note. I think a lot of us had looked at 2023 and thought, you know what? The industry is going to start recovering. We're just in a bit of a downturn. We're going to start recovering here in the second half of 2023. I even heard people predicting that we are already in a recovery in the second quarter of 2023. Well, that ain't happening. In fact, I'm going to go on record right now, and I'm going to say that we're not going to see a strong rebound in enterprise and cloud spending, enterprise and cloud technology, new companies, hiring, all of these things that we care about here in the Gestalt IT community. We're not going to see a rebound of that until 2024. That's my prediction. I'm sad to be saying that, but that's just how I see it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Stephen. I think that we're not out of the woods yet. We still face a whole lot of challenges, and I would love for things to be rosy, but unfortunately, the pessimist in me says that we've got a little bit more to go before we get there. But that means that signs are looking up, at least in some areas, and we're doing our part to help out there by getting the word out about some of the cool stuff that's going on. In the coming weeks ahead, I mean, we are in the second half of the year now. We're officially in July. And coming up the end of July, I have a cool event that I want to tell people about. That would be Networking Field Day 32. It's going to be happening July 26th and 27th. We've got some great companies signed up like Broadcom and Nile Secure. Nile's a brand new company that's really hot in the market right now. And they have an interesting way of looking at networking that I think you'll be pleased to hear about. And then in August, Stephen, you've got something coming up that we're also very excited to be participating in.
Absolutely. I'm heading to VMware Explore, and we'll be bringing Tech Field Day to VMware Explore, hearing from VMware, among other companies. We'll also be doing some other reporting from the floor there at Explore. And also, I wanted to give a shout out. It looks like we're going to be at Flash Memory Summit. We're going to be at SNEA's Storage Developer Conference with Storage Field Day, and also planning on getting to OCP Summit this year, as well as reInvent. So I look forward to seeing you at those events.
And we look forward to seeing you on the rundown each and every week whenever we record and have this published at 12:30 Eastern Time on Wednesdays. You can follow us on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GestaltITvideo. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcast application of choice. Just look for Gestalt IT Rundown. Stephen and I will be here, one of us or both of us, depending on the week. You know, we with all the stuff we have going on, we have a great group of co-hosts that kind of assist us as needed. We love to get their perspective on the news as well, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about the rundown. So make sure you leave a comment either under our videos or on our podcasts. We want to hear what you have to say. You know, do you like our take on the news? Do you feel like there's something we need to be covering? Do you have an angle that we should have considered? We want to hear from you as the community, because this is what we do. Stephen and I love being a part of this community. We love educating and sharing with you, and we want to hear what you have to say. We'll be back next week with another great episode of the news that was, and hopefully it'll be something exciting and wonderful, and we'll get to tell you all about it when we see you next Wednesday around 12:30 Eastern Time. Until then, take care, stay cool, and we'll see you soon.